Welcome to Design vs. Dev, a podcast about web development from the different perspectives of designers and developers. We help web developers be better at design and designers be better at development. I'm your developer host, Micah.
And I'm your designer host, Drew.
Design vs. Dev is brought to you by the Agile League, a web development agency based in Atlanta, Georgia, specializing in Ruby on Rails and Ember.js. So today, what are we talking about? Our one topic is CSS preprocessors. And before you just hit stop and move on, it sounds like a fancy, difficult thing, but it's actually very simple.
It sounds very scary.
It sounds very scary, but do not be scared because it is totally awesome. A CSS preprocessor is something that allows you to write in a sort of higher order CSS language. So it looks kind of like CSS, but it's nicer in a lot of ways. And then the preprocessor part means that it's compiled down into CSS. So it's translated by the computer into CSS, which the browsers understand. So to break that down, you write in a language that's easier for you to understand as a developer or designer, and then that is translated by the computer into raw CSS, which is what the browsers understand. And so what do you get when you use a CSS preprocessor? Well, there's a couple things. And so some examples that you get are things like nesting. Instead of having CSS rules just all at the sort of top level, you can nest things inside of other things so that, like, you know, you can say this rule should only apply when it's, in conjunction with another rule that it's nested inside of. So you get nesting. You can also get variables. Perfect example here is colors. You're going to use the same color 100 times in your CSS. We'll set it once as a variable and then reference that variable. If you ever need to change the color, you're good. Another one is sort of file splitting and combining. Rather than trying to cram everything into a single CSS file, you can split it apart into as many different files for whatever structure that you want. And then the preprocessor will pull all those together and put them back together into one single file, so you don't have to worry about doing hundreds of HTTP requests and having performance issues there.
Let's take a step back. You're scaring the hell out of me as a designer. Like, listen to all those terms you're throwing around just to describe a simple little thing. It makes it sound like a daunting task to get in there.
What is it from your perspective?
It makes CSS what CSS should be. It gives you all the tools and the things that you love about HTML, such as nesting. You know, we do this stuff in HTML if you're doing simple front-end development. And it gives you the ability to organize your CSS in a similar manner. It's the bee's knees.
So yeah, basically I was listing out all the features, but Drew's right. It allows you to write CSS in a way that once you get used to it, you think to yourself, this is just what I should have been doing all this time. So, why don't you jump in, Drew, and give us a deeper perspective from the designer side.
Well, you know, I was hesitant to jump in for the same reason I just pointed out to Micah. When he was describing it, it sounded like he was reading a tech textbook or something that had no connection with the design that I would be trying to make. And when you see and hear it described as a preprocessor, you think, we're putting something in the middle. I'm putting something between me and the finished file. And you look at web trends, we're going simpler, flatter, cleaner. You know, they say good code is clean and simple code. Why would I try and do something that makes it look and appear more complicated and add a middleman? That's a valid concern, but I think it's just that. It's a surface concern. Once you get in there and start using it, you'll see, as a designer, CSS is so much improved by having one of these tools, less or SAS, in between it. It really does. It makes it what CSS should be, and it really alleviates all the pains you've had of trying to design and trying to work and create and craft in a CSS file quickly. I can't speak. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We should. That's a good point. We should take a step back. We've been using sort of the generic, unbranded term of CSS preprocessor, but what we really mean, specifically for Drew and me, is less or SAS. These are the two CSS preprocessors that we're familiar with. There may be other ones out there, but when we say CSS preprocessor, we mean less or SAS. And sometimes I just call them SLAS.
That works.
Because we'll get to it in a bit. But they, you know, choose one, choose the other. There's reasons to go for one or the other. But like ultimately, either one of them is massively better than just raw CSS. So all right, keep going. You were talking.
Yes. So LESS or SAS, they both offer a comparable feature set, and they're really great. Nesting, you know, like we said, that some of these features sound scary, but they really are very similar to what when you're structuring an HTML document. Nesting is very similar. You know, you nest a div inside of a div, and the ability to do that in CSS to reflect how you're building your HTML and a one-to-one ratio is just... it's hard to go back once you've used that on a single project. Seriously, after one project of doing this as a designer, you'll never want to go back to straight CSS. In fact, I will take half an hour to an hour anytime I have to go back to an old legacy project that needs updates and rip out, or I guess I should say, you know, put in CSS, put the CSS in as a SAS document or a LESS document, because it's just, it's so much better. Just having that one-to-one nesting, I can't speak highly enough of it.
Well, and with SAS, at least, I'm not really familiar with LESS, but with SAS, at least, syntactically, actual CSS is also valid SAS. And so if you do go back to an old project and you're like, oh, I really want to use SAS on this instead of just raw CSS, you can basically just rename the existing files to like .scss or .sass or whatever, and then keep working in it. You know, you don't have to rewrite every single one of your rules that's already there. You actually can just rename the file and then start writing in SAS at that point if you don't want to go back and rewrite everything that you've already done. Isn't that right?
That's smart. Okay. And I've done that as well. Sometimes I'll get so frustrated with an old project because my CSS file will be huge. I mean, thousands of lines of CSS code, and navigating through that is just a pain in the ass. And so being able to break those files up into a file just for your header, a file for your footer, a file for your various page views, even if you're not putting them into the SAS or LESS language, breaking them out into separate files so you just can hop between the files when you need to target an element makes it easier for yourself to parse and find the elements you're looking for on some of those older projects. Just spending 10 minutes, that takes 10 minutes to do, and that will improve your workflow. You'll save those 10 minutes in your first hour of work.
Well, and let me hit that specifically. So you're saying, you know, break it apart so that you've got your header and your footer and your different page elements. So a lot of people will say, I can do that already. I mean, there's no rule that says I have to have all my CSS in one file. I can have as many CSS files as I want, and then I just include them in, you know, in the HTML document. I could mm-hmm. say like, all right, link to style sheet header, link to style sheet footer, link to style sheet, you know, page one. But as everybody hopefully knows at this point, there's a real performance hit with that. And I, you know, you'll hear from me over and over again, I don't really care too much about performance. I think people focus on that way too much, but including 10 or 15 or 20 CSS style sheets, like, actually will have a huge performance penalty. Every extra HTTP request that you make, whether it's for another JavaScript file or for a CSS file, like, it's bad. It's hard. It sucks. So it's been a best practice now for several years to combine all of your CSS into one file. And the easiest way to do that is to, just write it all into a single file by hand. But then you've got the problem of like the single giant monolithic file. But to bring it back to our CSS preprocessors, what's very nice about them is they will do that part for you. When you compile it down to CSS, it doesn't matter if you've got it split into like 50 or 60 different files. They can combine everything down into a single file. If you want, some of them even support sort of the uglification. You know, they can cram it and get rid of all spaces and make it sort of super minimized. I don't recommend that, but they can do that. And then you get it down to a single file so that you've got a single HTTP request to pull it down. And so you don't have the issues with, you know, 50 files means 50 requests. So that's a huge feature that just like, yeah, it makes it so easy to organize things so that you can separate your styles out however you want, whether you want it to be like by header, footer, or you maybe want to have one style sheet for typography, another style sheet for colors. Again, and that comes with the variables too. It's like setting a bunch of variables in the color style sheet or setting variables somewhere else. So
yeah, you know, it's great. I typically have at least five SAS files for every project I do, and almost regardless of the size of the project that I'm working on. And you think, why do I need five separate files for a simple CSS sheet? But it really makes a difference. It's huge. I mean, I can't live without it anymore.
Right now, if you're not using one of these things, you probably have a single CSS file with a bunch of like big comment blocks in it being like, and here's where I do the colors. And then another comment block and it's like, and here's where I style the footer. Basically, rip all that out and separate those guys out into separate files. like Drew said, takes like 10 minutes, and afterwards, just it's just a better way of organizing things. So, what are some features here? Like some of the color stuff. Tell us about the color stuff, because I don't fully understand that.
So this is something that, as a designer, I can't speak highly enough of: color manipulation of variables. And you know, if the other features haven't swayed you into SAS or less as designer, this one should be the killer feature for you. You can define a variable. So, you know, I don't know if we want to touch on what a variable is. So basically you define the color once as, we'll call it main red. So we have our variable main red. And then anytime we want to use this color main red as a font color, we just say color equals, and then we call the variable main red. And we change it in one place, and it trickles down through the entire style sheet. So you have one color that you need to use throughout. Say this main red is your corporate color. You need to use it throughout the entire sheet. So you're using it 50 different times. And say the client comes back and says, we need you to change that, or we new have a new color set, or we have changed our rules with this. You change it one place. You don't need to do find and replace. It hits all of your files. You define your variable in one file. It'll trickle into the other files in your SAS stack if they're linked correctly. It is phenomenal. I mean, it's great for that kind of handling. On top of that, you can manipulate those colors using simple SAS functions. So if you want to lighten or darken a color, you can just say, you know, it's as simple as typing lighten the color variable, and then the percentage you want to lighten. You want it to be lightened up. That's it. And that's all you have to do to lighten or darken a color. It's great. You can saturate or desaturate colors. So you want a nice hover effect where you remove the color to a nice gray or black and white tone. Boom, you have your saturate and desaturate commands. You can change your hue on command, which allows you to do some really fun things, you know. Change your hues on scrolls, you know, if you throw in a little JavaScript and things like that. You can change your alpha transparency. So, you know, if you don't want to worry about having to make the entire element, change the entire element's opacity, but rather just a color or an item within that element, you can target the alpha transparency, the RGBA. You can do tint and shade, which, you know, add black or white to the color, which is different slightly than lighten or darkening a color. Just those basic things from a designer standpoint is just phenomenal. And you can't speak highly enough of this, especially for if you're using your browser to design and you're using code and prototyping for designing. This is the best way to just cut out Photoshop or any sort of raster or vector graphics component in your process. You can design and build and manipulate these colors on the fly.
Well, and we did this specifically in one of our projects with, I remember you gave us the design and we started to implement it, and we had, you know, you looked in there and you found that we were setting variables with SAS, but we were saying like gray 1, gray 2, gray 3, and we had these like very specific, you know, hex values for the grays, and you told us, oh no, well, there's one gray value, and then all of these others are just derived from it as like, you know, light and darken setups, you know, darken it by 10% for each step. And so we were able to redo that as like, all right, gray 1 is a specific hex value, gray 2 is darken gray 1 by 10%, gray 3 was darken gray 1 by 20%. You know, and so on and so forth. And so we were able to, like, you know, redefine these things and just make it a very easy, what would you say, like, relationship between one and the next.
Yeah, and, you know, and speaking to the developers out there, you might say, well, a gray is a gray is a gray. But when you get into a subtle website and you have to have multiple variations of a tone or of a gray, you can make huge changes onto the entire feeling of your website. So say your gray is slightly towards the cool side, so it's got blues and greens in it, and you change, you know, this is why this is great. So you change it, and those cool colors will subtly filter out throughout your site where you've used it. Say you want it to be a warm feeling on your website, so you know, the reds and the yellows, you can change your gray subtly towards the warm side, which might have effects. You know, it might make your darker grays, you know, have a little richer, more brownish kind of tone to it when you get to those darker grays, which has a completely different feel than like a cold, steely blue style gray. It'll change the entire emotion of your website.
Well, and it's very, again, from a developer side, if you don't have access to a designer to tell you exactly what your colors should be, like, you know, you can get sort of like a basic color scheme, you know, like I'm going to go with red or red and yellow, and like, you know, get yourself a basic color scheme, you know, do a Google search to find one that you like, and then you can use lighten and darken on the colors that you've got. You know, so you've got like two or three main colors, and then you call lighten and darken on it to get sort of accent and highlight colors. You know, oh, I want a hover state for this menu. Use a lighten. You know, just lighten the color that the menu items are already. So it's a huge help from that, like as a programmer, because you, like, at least for me, if someone's like, here's a color, you know, now I want a hover state of this color. I don't know what to do. I'm just like, I don't know how to create the hex value that they want, but just being able to call, all right, lighten 10%, boom, there, I've got my hover state. It might not be the perfect color scheme, but it's great in a pinch when you're like, I don't know how to make a color scheme.
So it gives you a tool to stay consistent with these minor interactions and add these subtle interactions that you want throughout your site. If you say my hover state is going to be lighten 10%, you can use that throughout your site in a consistent manner, and you'd be surprised how, if you had nothing there before or no transition before, how much it'll liven up your site.
One thing I wanted to touch on for a little bit, I said we'd get to it, is less versus SAS. Like, so we've been talking about these CSS preprocesses, they're one thing, but they're not. There's two main ones. There's less and there's SAS. So how do you choose which you're going to go with? And I'll give some tips based on what I know, but this is all, I got to preface this with the fact that I am a SAS fanboy, and I haven't really used less. It's not that I don't like less, it's just that I haven't used it. But from what I understand, less is very prevalent in the Bootstrap world. So if you are really into designing sites and you use Bootstrap, if that's the first thing you do, like when you set up a new site, is bring in Bootstrap. Well, I guess if you do that, then you probably already know less. You probably, you know, we're preaching to the choir here. But if, you know, what I'm saying is choose the tool chain. Or choose the tool that fits your tool chain. Like, if you are a Bootstrap person, you should be using less. Like, just ignore all the why one is better than the other and just stick with less. There are some Bootstrap forks and people have set up where they're like, you can use Bootstrap with SAS. But just in general, it's going to be harder to use Bootstrap with SAS.
Yeah.
Likewise, we use Foundation, the Foundation framework, a lot, and Foundation is built on SAS. And SAS is also very big in the Ruby world. So Ruby on Rails, in that community, SAS has caught on a lot more than less has. So that's why we use SAS. It's not necessarily that we think SAS is better. It's just that in the community that we run in, it's got a lot more support. So if I create a new project or if I'm doing something in Ruby on Rails and I want to use advanced, you know, CSS functionality, there's a good chance I can get it to work with SAS. I might be able to get it to work with less, but there's probably going to be less support for that. And, you know, when I do a search, I'm not going to find the Stack Overflow post that tells me exactly how to get less working. But that information is always there for SAS. So that's what I would say, is choose the one that fits you best based on the tools that you've got. And if you don't have any sort of tool set and, like, whatever you're using is not, you know, is agnostic to the two of them, go with SAS, because we love SAS. Less might be better, but we just don't know. The ice cream that we're eating tastes pretty good. The other one might taste even better, but I'm just going to keep eating the one that I've got.
Yeah, I'm not giving up this sweet, delicious cone of less or of SAS.
all right.
I've used both before. And, you know, on a surface level and for what most designers would be doing prototyping, they're very similar. I mean, the difference between that I noticed is when you call a variable, you use an at symbol in one and you use a dollar sign in the other. You know, it's the nesting is the same, the variables are the same. I think you can even do loops in less.
And on that note, like, if you follow my advice and you try to use SAS and you can't get SAS running, don't quit. Try less instead. Like, either one of them is better than just raw CSS. So if you get really frustrated with one or the other and you're like, this sucks, I don't want to mess with this anymore, you've spent like 2 hours trying to get it set up and you can't set it up and you can't, at least try to give the other one a shot before quitting and just, you know, chucking it all, because it is huge. It is, you know, these CSS preprocessors, I think, are one of the biggest sort of technology changes for the actual, like, process of web development, like sitting at the keyboard and banging away at the keys. This is one of the biggest changes that I've ever seen. So on that note, how do you set it up? And this is kind of funny, because Drew and I were talking about this ahead of time. I was going to ask him how to do it, and it turns out he wants to ask me how to do it. So, like I said, we do a lot of Ruby on Rails stuff. In that case, it's sort of built into the process. It's very easy for us to get it up and running, and we're already doing a lot of command line stuff anyway. If, however, you are a designer who's not very comfortable at the command line, or if you're a developer who's not comfortable at the command line, there are ways to sort of dip your toes in the water. Like SAS for one, in general, is a Ruby package that you have to install. So you have to have Ruby installed. You have to have Ruby gems installed. You have to go to the command line and type a bunch of arcane commands. It can be daunting. However, there are a few text editors that come with SAS and less as well, you know, built into them from the start, so that you can just run a text editor and, you know, it will automatically compile things down to CSS, and it'll have syntax highlighting and tell you, you know, is your SAS sheet syntactically correct and all that sort of mumbo jumbo. So what I would recommend is, if you're brand new and you don't want to mess with the command line just yet, try one of the downloadable text editor apps. Some of them you have to pay for. One of them was like $20, one was $40. Like, it's worth it. It's worth it just to try it out. And then, who knows, maybe you'll like the text editor, maybe you won't. Maybe your text editor that you're using already has a plugin. So I'd search for that. If you're using Sublime or TextMate or something like that, look around and see if you can find some kind of compiler, you know, for SAS for your existing text editor. Otherwise, buy one of these, try it out, use it for an hour, and see if you like, you know, it'll be separate. You'll have your normal text editor open, and you'll have your like separate text editor just for your SAS sheets. See if you like it. See if you like using SAS. See if you like using less. And if you do, then take the plunge figuring out how to get everything installed so that you can do it at the command line, which is what you do, right, Drew?
I do. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't macOS come with a base Ruby installed? I mean, it might not have everything you need, but you don't have – there's a locked version that the system uses?
I think so.
Correct.
It's sort of in the Ruby community – I'm not the smartest guy when it comes to knowing what's on my machine by default, but in the Ruby community, we kind of scoff at like the built-in version of Mac Ruby, and so we jump through all kinds of hoops to uninstall and reinstall what we want. So I'm not exactly sure what you get when you get like a fresh install of Mac OS, but I do believe you're right, that you can just use the one that's built in already, and it already has Ruby gems as well. So if you're not a nut like me, then it's probably not that hard. You can probably just and looking at some of the SAS like installation instructions, it does look pretty easy. You still have to do it at the command line, but then at that point you have it running at the command line, and you use watch, right?
Yeah, I just use the SAS command SAS watch, and then you put the file name, and then you choose where you want it to output.
Right, and in that case, it just sits there and runs in the background, and you type SAS into your text editor, and then when you hit save, the SAS program sees that you've saved it and then compiles it and outputs it as CSS, right?
Correct, yeah.
So let's say you're working on, you know, a sort of a simple-ish site. You have it, you've got your site template referencing CSS, a CSS file, and then you just tell SAS to watch the SAS file that you're writing and then output it to the location of the CSS file that's being imported in the browser, right?
Yep.
And so then basically you edit your file, hit save, and then refresh in the browser.
I do. And, you know, I wonder if there's a better method. I tried some of the free applications that were out there and that you could download, that you boot it up and it'll automatically watch any SAS file you have or you tell it to watch. And I found, you know, I have to have an application open regardless, so I might as well just do it through the terminal. It's already there.
And this is something that I would caution people against, which is trying to figure out the perfect setup right away. You're right that there probably is a better way, and that some of the tool sets will have things like live reload, where it'll automatically force the browser to refresh every time you save the file. I'll admit, that's pretty cool. I use that in a lot of things, and I didn't think it was that big of a deal to just hit refresh on my own, but it is nice to, you know, not have to hit the command R key all the time. But don't get caught trying to make the perfect setup. Like, get it up and running first with just, you know, a simple watch or using the downloadable text editors or something like that. And then once you get hooked on it and once you really like it, then you can start futzing with your setup. So,
yeah. And, you know, I'm lazy. I know there are better systems out there for creating this. I know I could find some live refresh tool or run a local server with a live refresh that would catch it all. But I just run it, open the terminal, get it running, forget about it, and then push any updated file to my staging server online. And that's my process. And it's clunky, and I know it's clunky, and I know I need to take 20 minutes one of these days to just research and figure out a better solution. But this gets me going, and honestly, I never want to look back to the old way and an old straight CSS file.
So a few more tips before we close it out. And again, this is about getting you started and not getting you paralyzed, because one of the things you're going to run into is once you start using nesting and once you start breaking up your project into multiple files, into multiple CSS files, you can quickly get paralyzed trying to figure out the best way to do things. Like, there's a lot of opinion out there about how you should structure your CSS in like a multi-file structure. There's even one called SMAX, which is like scalable modular something something CSS. Huh. So There's SMAX, there's plenty of blog posts that'll tell you, you know, you should do it like this, you should do it like that, you know, have one for your layout, one for your colors. And I would just say, don't try to get it perfect from day one. Putting some, you know, basic layout in one and some color variables in another, that's a good way to do it. Putting typography in another one is good. Trying to have one sheet for each different sort of template view, like this is the product page, this is the product listing page, that's a good way to do it as well. But don't feel that you need to get it exactly right on day one. You're taking a huge step just making it so that it's not all in one giant file. Yeah. And then again, on the lines of keeping it simple, once you start looking into SAS, like SAS specifically, but I'm sure this is true with LESS, you will start finding there's all kinds of other tools out there. And specifically with SAS, what you're going to find is Bourbon is one, and there's another one called Compass. I think there's some more. But these are sort of advanced tools that build on top of SAS and add other features in on top of them. When you're just getting started, don't worry about these things. They're cool, and there's a lot of stuff that you can get in addition to what you get just with raw SAS by using something. I'm a fan of Compass. I use it a lot. But I still get confused sometimes. Like, wait a minute, what's Compass and what's SAS and which one am I using now and how am I using it? And so when you're just getting started, it's already confusing enough. So just ignore those, at least for your first project. Ignore Compass, ignore Bourbon. And just stick with like the raw SAS, and it's still like it's still way better than nothing.
So a tool set for your tool set for you, you know, this for a question for you, Micah, for the developers who are getting into this, why would you need to add something like Bourbon or Compass? And when SAS first started, didn't you need Compass in order to make it watch a file? You know, I
honestly don't know. Like I said, I still get confused. I'm not even sure sometimes what Compass does. In addition and over top of SAS. And I think it may be that like Compass did more in the past and SAS did less. What I mainly use Compass for is things like Compass provides things like transitions and cross browser compatibility. Like if you're writing a lot of CS rules that are like dash WebKit dash such and such transition, you know, dash transition, like Compass actually has some really nice includes where you just say like Compass transition, and then you give it the name like transform or scale or rotate or whatever, and just write it once, and Compass will automatically output it with all the different browser branded, whatever they're called, you know, specific tags to it. And I mean, what's cool there is like if you do it 10 years in the future when all the browsers have standardized on that stuff and they all use the actual real one, it, you know, theoretically you wouldn't need the branded ones anymore, and Compass will automatically handle that for you. So
So, I mean, why, as a developer, is that, I mean, I understand it saves you time, but wouldn't you have more control if you just wrote your own mix-ins, right? That's what these are, Compass and Bourbon. They're just a collection of mix-ins, which is a tool that lets you, you know, it's like a function, lets you rewrite the same type of output, put a variable in and get a different kind of output.
True, right? You're right. You'll have more control if you write your own, but you'll find that I don't want a lot of control. Like, especially with something like CSS that I don't really know all that well. I don't know how to do the best CSS kind of tricks. And so if someone else is like, guess what? I do know that, and I've included it in this mix-in, I'm sold. Like, I'll use your stuff any day over my own if you just tell me, like, I'm better at CSS than you, and here's some reusable functions that I wrote that you can use. I'm like, I'm all over that. So that's what I would say. I think we're running out of time here. You got any final thoughts, Drew?
No. Well, final thought, if you're a designer and you're not using SAS or less, start.
Yes, and I would agree with that as well. There's a whole world of awesome out there you're missing out on.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much, and stay tuned, keep listening, and we'll have another episode out to you soon.